honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to this special year-end edition of Hometown Heroes, reflecting on just a few of the powerful stories we heard from veterans on this program over the past year. So far today, we've revisited memories from veterans of World War II, the Korean War, and Vietnam. But the final veteran we'll hear from is an Army Ranger from New Mexico who earned the Medal of Honor in Afghanistan. Here are Leroy Petrie's memories of May 26th, 2008.
It is a life or death job. It's not like working at Burger King where you forget to put somebody's lettuce on somebody's sandwich and, oh, I'm sorry, we'll fix that. You can't bring those things back where once you train someone and a bullet leaves their barrel, you're responsible for that bullet as much as they are. You try to teach them ethics and to be a good person, but also to be a good soldier. The Ranger Creed was one of those things that I always looked at, and they told me if you live your life by the Ranger Creed, and your decisions you make, you look at the creed, you'll be okay. Historically, that's what they did in World War II. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get up those cliffs, and they looked back at General Norman Dakota, and he said, Rangers, lead the way. And we've been trying to maintain and hold that standard since then. The day before, Rangers operate during night activities. We don't want to kill every terrorist, put it that way. A live terrorist is worth more than a dead one, because dead ones don't talk. Mm-hmm. And so we try to catch them while they're sleeping, and we'd go at night operations because we had night vision and we had the cover of darkness. This day before our mission, we got alerted. All special operations in theater in Afghanistan, hey, there's a high-value target that's come up on the net that we think is operated in Afghanistan somewhere. Everyone's going to stand down. Whoever is closest to him when he pops up will action on it. And so during the daytime, we normally sleep or we check our email, do laundry, all our other stuff, and go to the gym. But that morning, I woke up and I went to the planning bay, and there's one officer across the room from me, and he's on his laptop, and I'm checking my email, and all of a sudden he jumps up. Petrie, go wake up the pilots. He didn't even question what it was about. Just ran to go wake up the pilots. Immediately went and woke up my guys as well. I said, hey, something might be going on. Check your kit. Be ready. It's better to be prepared than proactive instead of reactive. Mm-hmm. But as I did that, I went to our chow tent, if you will. And as I walk in there, it's decorated red, white, blue everywhere. And I'm like, what's going on? I get to the end. I was trying to grab a couple of little bags of beef jerky. We got stuck out a couple days before and longer than expected, and morale from the young guys, oh man, we were supposed to be back already. And you throw up a little bag of beef jerky and it boosts their morale. We call it lickies and chewies. But as I was doing that, as I get to the end of the table, I see the sheet cake and it says Happy Memorial Day. And I'm looking around and I'm like, wow. Took a moment of silence. Our up-tempo was so high that I mean, by the time you look at the date, you're like, man, we've already been over here for 3 weeks or whatever it may be. And after I paid my respects, I ran out the door and immediately told my guys, check their equipment, and we started planning for this mission. The guy actually popped up in our area, and so high-value target, quick mission planning. Next thing we know, we're on three Chinooks headed out to the mission. Rural Afghanistan, a lot of farmland and adobe-type houses and compounds. And as we came off the Chinooks, the other hard part about it is because we're flying during daylight, you can hear a Chinook helicopter out for miles. Mm-hmm. And so as we land and the ramp goes down in the back, we're coming out the back, we're taking fire. The guy in the open field, politically correct term, we neutralize the threat. And as we're clearing the body, my platoon leader and I, we hear it over the radio that one of our younger squad leaders had gone into the wrong compound, and he was correcting it and going across the road. And I said, hey, I'm going to break off, provide overwatch for these guys. And he said, go ahead. As I caught up to that squad, they had already breached the compound wall, which was probably about 20-foot walls. and they were already entering into the compound. I followed in as the last man. As they did, they went across the compound and started clearing a smaller structure in the back corner, kind of a two-story, and it had an inner compound in there, but I didn't even go in. I stopped in the doorway and I said, give me another guy. My big thing in my mind was we needed to clear the rest of this courtyard and the adjacent small building. And so as soon as I got a tap, I didn't even look who was with me. I just knew I had somebody with me and I started to move. It was PFC Robinson. And as we started to cross to this small adjacent building, two guys popped up probably 15, 20 feet to our left, spraying AK-47s from the hip. I got shot in my left thigh and it felt like a sledgehammer, like somebody just pounded your leg and kind of looked like a deer when it gets shot on TV where it bucks mid-stride, but then kept running because mentally I was thinking, get out of the kill zone before you take another hit. Robinson got hit just below his armpit. He didn't know how bad it was. We found out later it was about a quarter of an inch from going over his plates and it would have hit his heart, his lungs, and he probably would have died there instantly. But he followed me, got behind the small building. This building's only about 7 feet wide, about 6 feet long. And immediately I tell him, hey, watch that corner, do self-aid, and I'm watching this corner. They're shooting around the corner still. And I prepped a grenade, threw it over, it went off, kind of bought us a lull in fire. At that point, Sergeant Higgins, another Ranger, comes running over, and I said, hey, help Robinson, watch that corner. My biggest fear was they were going to come over and around the sides and finish us off while we're injured. And so I get on the radio, I'm giving my command a better picture of what's going on. Tell them we still have Rangers in contact, heavy small arms, and two wounded Eagles. And next thing we know, we hear a blast. The two guys next to me look at me and they're like, what the heck was that? And I said, they're throwing grenades. Keep your heads down, keep watching those corners. So I go back, I'm almost in a crouched seated position because my leg was hurting. I'm checking my side, watching my corner, turning back, checking on them, checking back, radio. And on one of my checks to check on them, there was a pineapple grenade that had come over the building and landed right behind them. I knew we hadn't used pineapple grenades in years. It wasn't there before. And so just immediately saw it as a threat and reached out, grabbed it. And as I was throwing it away from our position, as soon as I opened my hand to release it, it exploded. Completely took the hand off, almost like somebody had taken a circular saw and cut it off. I sat up, grabbed it. The radius and the ulna were poking up about a half an inch. It was bleeding pretty, like more like oozing. And the skin was hanging all the way around, short 2-inch skin, flap skirt, so to speak. And in my mind, I was thinking, why isn't this thing spraying 3 feet in the air like in the movies, blood just squirting? And when reality hit, I said, I know how to take care of this. I grabbed a tourniquet, put it on, tied it with my teeth in my hand, stopped the bleeding, and immediately checked on my two guys who got minor shrapnel. In fact, they both went out on missions the next day and stayed in the military for some time longer. But once I saw they were okay, one of my first sergeants comes running up to me and he grabs me by my shoulder, by my kit, and he's attempting to pick me up and say, come on, we're going to get you out of here. And I kind of pushed his arm and I said, you're not taking me anywhere. Not till you kill those SOBs behind the building and stop the volume of fire they're putting down on us. He saw that I was coherent. I had already started doing self-aid, and the best thing he could do was take out the enemy and stop them from firing on us. So he took off to go flank. At that point, when he left, there was another lull in fire. I don't know if they ran low on ammo or what it was, but I was able to grab onto another guy, and we ran out of there till we got to our casualty collection point. And at that point, we walk in, and the medics are treating guys, and you see blood everywhere, for me, it was the first chance I got to take a breath. I mean, the adrenaline and everything running. And the doc, one of our medics, comes walking up to me and says, Petrie, we need to treat you. And I said, I'm good. I already got a tourniquet on this thing. I stopped the bleeding, helped those guys. And he said, well, we got to take a look at your legs. I completely forgot about my legs. And I thought I was only shot in the left thigh. It ended up being both thighs. And so I looked down at my pants, and they're soaked in blood all the way to my boots. Mentally, I wanted to stay in the fight, but physically, I knew I was running out of juice. And my idea was that even if I used my last breath to give a radio call that could help my guys, that's what I wanted to do. But I knew I wasn't helping anybody by bleeding out. So I sat down, and I let them cut off my pants, and they put me in a litter. And as they started to carry me out to our helicopter landing zone, where helicopter was going to come in from medevac, guys are running up to me, and they're, hey, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. We're going to get them for you. And I'm pushing them away with one good arm I have. Get out of here. Go pull security. Because, I mean, we're still in a combat zone, and there's still sporadic fire here and there. And my big fear is that they're going to get shot coming to comfort me. And I never lost that leader mentality of looking out for my guys. And which is worse, I might get shot where I can't defend myself in this litter. Then I'm really going to be angry. But we get up to the aircraft. The aircraft lands, and they start loading us up. And even Sergeant Higgins next to me, he's leaning down, and he's like, you saved us, you saved us. I was like, great, get on the bird. I'm thinking big target, still thinking about their safety and everyone's safety. And at that point, they took us back to our forward operating base, Sharana, which is a dirt airfield. Dumped us on the side of this dirt airfield, all the casualties, and then the helicopter took back off to support the mission. And I think it was probably about 30 minutes later, they had a fixed-wing aircraft come in and pick us up. It was the J. Mal Bird, which is basically like you could do open-heart surgery in the back of this plane. And at that point, I was like, oh. And I had two PAs that were working on all of us casualties there that were organic and who I'd known since I had pretty much joined the Rangers. Several years before, and I felt a little at ease. Get on the aircraft, they load us on there with the litter, and probably about 30 more minutes, and they heavily sedated me, and next thing I remember is waking up in Germany. Germany was interesting. I wake up the next day in Germany, and the nurse is in my room, and she says, oh, you're awake? Can I get you anything? I said, yeah. Can you get me a razor and some shaving cream? She kind of does this double take, and she goes, excuse me? I said, can you get me a razor and some shaving cream? And she looked at me like I was nuts, but in my mind, that discipline of being in the Rangers was still at the front, where I was more worried about a colonel or somebody coming in not from my unit and seeing Leroy unshaven. Nobody would have cared in the condition I was in. I was pretty mangled, but that was our standards. In our blue book was Rangers will shave every single day to include weekends, holidays, at home, whatever. And so I learned how to shave left-handed that first day, but I also got a chance to call my wife, and I knew she was going to be an emotional wreck. At this time, it's Memorial Day back home, and my mother-in-law would come in sometimes to help with the kids, and they were both in their nightgown. It was early in the morning, and they got the knock at the door. And they'll come in fatigues, field uniform if you're injured, and dress uniform if you're killed in action. And she walks over the door, and she looks through the peephole, and she doesn't even look at the uniform. She just sees the tan Ranger beret, and she backs away from the door, and she said, Mom, you're going to have to send the kids upstairs. You're going to have to get the door. And I knew all this was going to happen. And so I'm trying to think when I call her what I can tell her that'll put her mind at ease that I'm in good spirits and I'm doing okay. And so I call her and I said, honey, I'm in Germany. I got shot through both my legs, upper thighs, and I lost my hand right about the wrist. Phone goes dead silent. So, of course, the hamster on the wheel upstairs starts running as fast as it can to come up with something good to tell her. And I said, the good news is the junk's still there. And she's like, all right, he's all right. He's going to be okay. If he's joking, he's in good spirits. But that's the only way I could let her know that I was doing okay.
Wow. Well, I got a lot of questions. Some of them may be more on the dumb side than others, but they were basic anyway. I'm sure you've considered this. What would have happened if you didn't pick that grenade up and throw it back?
Well, the kill radius is usually 5 meters, so chances are we'd all be dead.
How many guys was that?
Definitely the two next to me, but there was a couple others as well nearby.
And yourself?
And myself, yeah.
In that moment, how does that thought process work? Are you thinking at all? Or are you just reacting?
It had always been foremost in my mind that I looked at those guys like they were my brothers, like they were my children, and I would have done the same for them. I do want to share a picture with you real quick.
Yeah.
Artist did a rendition of the action, and he did a painting. This is a picture of the print, and it doesn't do it justice. You know, actual oil paintings hanging at my unit, and it's pretty amazing. So that was me laying on the ground with bloody legs with the grenade. But
wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Most of us will never be in that situation, and anybody watching or listening to this is likely never going to be in that situation. But I think people imagine themselves in it, and they have to ask themselves the question, what would I have done? What do you think it was that motivated you to act the way you did?
I know exactly what it was. It's a thing we don't talk about in the military that often. Definitely not in the Rangers unless we're talking about beer and chasing women. But love. It was love for a fellow soldier and responsibility. With leadership comes responsibility. And my biggest fear, people ask me, were you ever afraid? I said, yeah. I was afraid every single day. I wasn't afraid of dying. I made my peace with God and I said goodbye to my family. I knew it was the last time I could see them. And I accepted that. But what I was afraid of was I would miss an IED in the road. I'd miss a shooter in a window. I'd miss the opportunity to train my guys on something that could have saved their life. And what I feared was having to come home and hand that folded flag to a mother, a daughter, a brother, a sister, a husband, a father, you name it. And what I did, though, was I turned that fear into awareness. I made sure I didn't get complacent and my guys didn't get complacent, even though we'd been down the same road 100 times. I took the opportunity to train them on things, that tasks that we hadn't been given, just so that they were more prepared. And I never lost sight of my job was to bring them home alive. Now, war is hell, and you can't control everything. And I wanted to know, though, that at the end of the day, if I had to hand a folded flag to someone, that I did my best to bring their son or daughter alive, home alive. And so that's the way I looked at them, and it's instinctive to care for them.
Medal of Honor recipient Leroy Petrie, one of so many veterans who allowed us to view our freedom in a little different light this year by sharing their experiences here on Hometown Heroes. Thanks for listening today and all year long. I'm Paul Leffler wishing you the happiest new year and inviting you to stay tuned in 2024 when we'll be reminded each and every weekend through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.